In 1973, an extraordinary motion picture stunned our senses and uncovered our deepest fears in a way no film had ever done before. When it was over, we thought the terror had ended, but it had just begun. Morgan Creek and 20th Century Fox proudly present The Exorcist 3, Legion, written and directed by William Peter Blatty, the creator of The Exorcist, coming this summer.
Welcome to Speak All Evil, the podcast you were warned about. I'm Trent, here with Kevin, Kat, and Dave. Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Back in the studio this week. Guys, I have seen what I believe, I've been thinking about this for days now, is the darkest dark comedy ever made.
Okay.
Dave, you saw it?
Yeah. I'd have to really, like, go down the annals of dark comedy, but it is very dark.
New movie called The Coffee Table. It's available only for purchase on Prime.
Not
right
new.
Now. Well, it's new to release. It's been kicking around. The Coffee Table's been kicking around the festival circuit since 2022, and I saw a couple things about it. People talking about The Coffee Table, but it bounced around, and now it's going into a wide digital release in May. But right now it's on Prime purchase, only $10. I think it's a great deal. And I saw some people talking about that, and I couldn't wait until May. I had to throw down and watch this movie. It's definitely it's the darkest comedy I've ever seen, certainly. And I was harassing Dave about it. Dave watched it. I just cannot think of another movie that I have ever been... had this strange feeling of you're laughing because it's so funny at the same time. You're going, no, this is so terrible. It's so wrong. You feel so terrible, but then you're laughing. It's so weird.
I like it when a movie does this thing. Like, you've been at the movies with me when I've fallen asleep at a film festival, even. I fell asleep multiple times. And Caitlin also falls asleep. But sometimes there are some movies where she'll just snap to attention and she always says the same thing. I fucking hate this movie. And she just kept on clenching her fists and saying that I fucking hate this movie. And now we fucking own it because you have to own it for standard definition. We got it for $8.99. And it was like, she just didn't even want it in the house. She was like, now I fucking own it and I hate this. But she actually loved it. But it's a very stressful experience.
Yes, that's what it's like. It's almost like an Uncut Gems level of anxiety and stress. That's how stressful it is. But you're also laughing. And you're also like, this is the darkest thing I've ever seen.
And it's just about a coffee table?
That's the thing. I can't say. This is one you really got to go in. I want to talk about it at some point, but you really just, that's all you can know. It's a Spanish black comedy. It's called The Coffee Table. I believe it's a first time feature.
All the supernatural special effects of The Coffee Table are really real looking, though. They are. They're really cool.
I wish I could say more, but that's...
Yeah, I mean, even the Wikipedia page plot. The plot follows a couple formed by Maria and Jesus who buys a tacky table, a move that proves to be their worst decision ever.
Definitely, I would say yes.
Okay.
Definitely their worst decision ever. Yeah. Oh, man. So good. Anybody see anything else besides the movies we're going to talk about this week?
I watched Late Night with the Devil, which is now streaming on Shudder.
Yeah, and you loved it.
Fucking loved it. And talk about like a perfect double feature when when the new Omen movie comes out, Late Night with the Devil and the first Omen is like a great double feature and two very uniquely different homages to like 70s cinema. They're fucking awesome. Like, I couldn't have watched Late Night at a better time having just seen Omen in the theater. So I loved that movie. Ending, a little questionable overall, I think, but what a great flick. And then I watched Double Blind.
I don't think so.
It's a drug trial. So it basically takes you into a facility where people have volunteered to do a new drug trial, and they're totally closed down for like 5 days. But then eventually they discover that whatever drug that they are taking, you can't fall asleep or you die. It's really good. It's good. Kind of like, remember Come True, that film that we talked about? Yeah. A little bit like that, maybe a little less psychedelic, but very straight and to the point. Like, there's no backstory on characters. Like, it drops you in to this facility. You learn about the people as the movie goes. Some pretty good gore. Yeah, I would recommend it. I would probably wait for streaming if you don't want to drop like the $6.99 rental or whatever, but it's a good one.
Nice. Double Blind.
Yep.
Oh, I'll keep my eyes out. I've been watching some 70s stuff too. I meant to mention last week, I finally saw Messiah of Evil.
Oh, you mentioned it.
Yeah, no, but I didn't mention it here.
Oh, okay.
He saved it for the pod.
Oh, he did? Yeah, he did.
I forgot it for the pod. Man, Messiah of Evil is great, and that's kind of a... I feel like not that many people know about it, because when I see something I really like, I always go online and try to get in and see what other people say about it. Man, it's so good. It's like a weird, kind of a trippy zombie. It's like a zombie movie, but it's a very different zombie movie. It's a totally original.
It's scary.
Yeah, I thought it was really scary. Yeah, 1973. It's on Shudder, but it's also everywhere, all the free platforms. I also watched The Toolbox Murders.
Oh, wow.
78. Have you seen that, Kevin?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
I thought I had only seen the beginning, but I actually had seen it all. Once I finished, I knew I had seen it. But so good, man. That's a really weird one. I definitely want to talk about that.
Have you seen The Driller Killer?
No, I want to see that.
Yeah, they're a little bit similar.
It's kind of like two movies in one, because the first half is just... they just go murder after murder after murder after murder. Just a string of senseless, brutal murders. And then the second half gets into more of a wackier, almost like Butcher Baker, Nightmare Maker thing, or almost like a Don't Go in the House, like a character thing with a guy. Really weird movie, but really good. I'd be interested in the Tobe Hooper remake.
No need.
No?
Not good. And I feel like maybe like unfinished.
Mm.
I'd have to look it up.
I
watched that, or maybe it was like a really delayed release or something. There's something up with the Tobe Hooper one where it was incomplete, or it got stuck up in like release or something, but it's not good.
I read that it's a different... he didn't really try to... he just kind of went his own way with the title, is my understanding. Kat, you seen anything good this week?
It's getting down to the finals on Next Level Chef, so that's really excited.
Terrifying.
About that. Pretty terrifying. Really nail-biting.
That's scary. A lot of sharp objects probably flying around.
Yeah, so, you know, the platform moves. So that's, you know, that's like the premise of the show, is that like the platform comes down and everyone only has like a certain amount of time to grab the ingredients that they need for their dish. Oh. So it's really, whew.
This week, speak of the devil.
Oh.
It's Kevin Satan Week. Kevin's been talking about how tired he is of all this religious horror.
Yep.
And then here we go, a little bit more. Can't have too much, apparently. We're going to start with the 1990 film, The Exorcist III.
Police Lieutenant Kinderman notices similarities between his current murder investigation and the methods used by the Gemini killer who was executed 15 years before. He soon discovers a hospitalized mental patient claiming to be the dead serial killer, but who looks uncannily like a priest Kinderman knew who died during an exorcism. As more bodies are found, Kinderman looks for connections between the two supposedly dead men.
So this isn't like Maximum Overdrive, where you get the author finally getting behind the camera and directing one of his books. This considerably better, I think. But this movie is one that I totally missed. And I didn't watch it until probably late 90s, early 2000s or something, but loved it. Like, this movie took me by surprise when I watched it, because obviously you're going up against The Exorcist, legendary movie, The Exorcist 2, one of the worst movies of all time. Then this one, I don't know why, just never caught it, but couldn't believe. And I watched this at a time, right around probably the same time that Devil's Advocate like would have been on like HBO every single time you turned it on. So I was very much in like that theology space, and also very caught up in like procedurals. like the 90s were a time where like everything like Seven and like Fallen with like Denzel Washington, everything had to have like a cop procedural element to it. And this one, I really felt it. It was cool.
Yeah.
Whenever I watched it for the first time, there are a couple scenes in this movie that scared me so badly that it sticks with me to this day. And I've never been able to recreate it because obviously some of them are set up so well. You know it's coming. It's a one-time deal. But holy shit, there's one scene that we'll talk about that, I mean, I have rarely been that scared by like a single moment in a film. Good cast. You got George C. Scott, legend. This week is basically George C. Scott versus Al Pacino.
Yes.
Who did it better?
My two dads.
Who did it better?
Yeah.
And then it really, I love the way it ties into The Exorcist because when I first saw this, that all went over my head. Other than Karis showing back up.
Yeah.
When I first watched this, I missed all of it because I was also very much not just cop procedural, but way into serial killers at the time. And I didn't at the time realize that Brad Dourif was the voice of Chucky. So I was like fascinated with this dude and his performance in this movie as the serial killer. So really appreciate it in later years when I saw it, all the tie-ins that it did have to The Exorcist. And one thing that I loved is there's so much dialogue. Both of the movies that I picked this week, I apologize if you're not a fan of dialogue. Yeah. They're talkers. Very long sequences. But The Exorcist 3 stuff, there is some stuff that like Father Dyer, that Kinderman, George C. Scott goes on, that's like Tarantino level dialogue.
I love it.
It's so good. Some of it's like completely out of left field. And then, I mean, this movie kind of has everything. It's got gore. It's got some trippy sequences. It's got your proper like theological deep dives and things like that. Nary a woman to be found in this film unless they're crawling on ceilings or asking you to fix their radio. But one of my favorite, most complete horror films.
I like this movie a lot. I feel like it suffered from the 90s being like bloodthirsty with reviews of especially sequels. It got kind of a bad rap. And on the other end of that, it's been exhumed recently by the internet way too much for me. I don't think it's fair to say that this is even better than the original, because that's what I see a lot on the internet.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Absolutely no.
So that's starting to irk me. So, you know, I go into it with a bias, being like, okay, this better knock my socks off. And that's what I've been exposed to. I saw it years ago and then just recently watched it again. I watched the Legion, the director's cut. And I know we're all split on these versions.
It's a cut week.
Yeah.
I honestly thought that the beginning of this is very like Curb Your Enthusiasm. He's like having like a chat with the priest and the guy at the newsstand and the other cops, and he's just like kind of yucking it up, and he's always yelling like, "I'm fine!"
And he's just like, "That's a pretty good impression."
And that part, I mean, like, I loved that part, but. I guess I'm not really, I'm way more of a fan of the theological, religious stuff that freaks me the fuck out than I am the procedural stuff, especially in this era. So I guess on that end of it, I went in and felt a little disappointed by this time. It is a great horror movie, but let's not get carried away.
This is the greatest third entry in a horror film franchise of all time.
Oh.
Okay.
Oh, no, no.
And this is one of my favorite horror movies. I'd never seen this.
Never seen it, period.
Never seen any version at all, any cut.
Wow.
No, this is one of my favorite horror movies all time. Wow. I love this movie. And I was so confused. I went to rent this on YouTube. I didn't even notice that what I rented was called Legion, parentheses, Exorcist 3 Director's Cut. I didn't even notice that. I'm just watching the movie, and I'm like, what the hell is going on with all these weird black and white scenes? It looks like VHS. This is some art house shit.
Cinema.
I did not expect this much art house from Exorcist 3. Now, I know people say these days that it was overlooked and that it's great, but this is very fucking weird. Okay, so I meant to explain, and I never did, that the 2016 director's cut of The Exorcist 3, which is called Legion, was assembled using a lot of black and white VHS daily film from the set, because that was all that could be recovered. So that's what was so confusing. So if you watch Legion, which I recommend, you're gonna it splices in and out of this this black and white footage. And if you don't know what it is, it's very discombobulating. But that's what's going on, and that's what I'm talking about here. And I was so confused by some of what was going on, but I love George C. Scott. He has got to be one of the most expressive figures. Just, he doesn't even have to do anything. Just his face is like Buddy all the time. Just his eyes, you know, his forehead, his eyebrows, his mouth. I mean, just everything he does is so emotive and expressive. I loved all the Buddy comedy stuff with him and Father Dyer.
Yeah.
I was like, what is this movie? What is all the yucks? They're just insulting each other the whole time, like doing that whole thing. Like, what is going on? And then there's all these murders, gruesome, horrible murders are going on. Little kids, a priest is murdered in the confessional. Father Dyer, somehow, just when you start to love the guy, you're thinking this is the movie, these are the two buddies, you know? Nope, he gets all his blood drained out of his entire body he's in the hospital. And then you get the reveal about the Gemini killer and all this stuff. Like, what in the hell is going on? So then I looked into it. I had no idea that William Peter Blatty, the author of The Exorcist, the novel, wrote and directed this. I had no clue. Yeah. That was not, I was so surprised. And I love the way this approaches a sequel. To me, usually, if you have a movie like The Exorcist, a big hit like that, the thinking is, all right, so part two, Reagan is possessed again. Or, you know, okay, part two, Father Karras, he does another exorcism. He goes somewhere else, and there's another girl. They just try to do the same thing over again. This, to me, is how you do a sequel to something like that. The relationship is the detective, played by George C. Scott Kinderman, who is a minor character in the first movie, but he was aware of the whole exorcism thing and all that. And so he's the main character, and he gets into this case, these murders that call back to this long dead, this executed killer, the Gemini killer, and he keeps finding all these things that lead back to the exorcism of Reagan in the first movie. I love that. And now there's a suspect who's claiming to be not only the Gemini killer, but he's claiming to be Father Karras from the first movie. And the director's cut opens with the final scene of the first movie of the priest falling down the stairs. But then it indicates that maybe he wasn't, there's something going on with his body. It shows his body in the morgue or whatever, and they're doing readings, and it's blipping the thing. So this patient X character that you meet in the hospital, now he's claiming to be all of these people. Man, I love this movie so much. Man, I had so much fun. I just think it's such a great way not only to do a sequel, but this kind of, to me, it was very, I like the procedural stuff. It was very 90s procedural. Yeah. Reminded me a lot of Cure. This is kind of like The Exorcist meets Cure, I thought, where you, or even Silence of the Lambs, even, you know, Patient X becomes kind of a Lecter
yeah.
type
yeah,
character.
Yeah, Dave mentioned that today. I hadn't picked up on that, but it's spot on.
Or like the character in X, where he's, you know, got the detective almost in a trance, and, you know, he's just, oh man, so good. So I didn't have time. I had to watch it again after I realized what I had just watched. I had to go back. I loved it even more the second time. I didn't have time to get to the actual theatrical version, which is totally different. They made Blatty film an entirely different final act to the film. Blatty didn't want to call it Exorcist. He wanted to just call it Legion. That was the name of the novel. He wrote the sequel to this. The studio insisted on calling it Exorcist, and they insisted on having an exorcism in it, which makes sense if you're going to call it The Exorcist. But yeah. So I wanted to see that, and it has Jason Miller from the first movie, but I just didn't have time to do 6 hours on this thing. I loved what I saw, and someday I am interested in seeing the theatrical cut. I would like to, but I had to move on for this week. But man, thank you. Love this movie.
I really enjoyed the spooky little movie.
Did you?
I did. It was fun. I wouldn't say, obviously, I liked it more than the OG, but it was frightening in its own ways. And as you guys had already talked about, it's got, you know, this true crime mystery kind of spin to it, which I'm always a big fan of. But then you still get like the sneaky little like demonic possession in there, obviously, because of The Exorcist. So it's great. I like that they had all those little callbacks to the OG as well. I guess you guys didn't see that though in your in your director's cut, because you didn't see the priest in the cell.
It doesn't have Jason Miller.
Yeah,
but it does have callbacks.
It still talks about like Reagan, yeah, and he's like, exactly. Oh, and she, you know, found out who the ancient demon was and like all that stuff. So
yes,
that was cool, and that's like obviously how they had kind of connected it. But it wasn't crazy gory, but it did have jump scares and plenty of beheadings, even though we don't see any beheaded people. Do we? Did you guys see any beheaded people in the director's cut?
No.
No? Okay. So I think that's what I wanted. We saw like a cut off finger, like we saw blood, but I wanted to see the beheadment
gorehound
happen. I know.
You're a gorehound.
I know. It wasn't like the most frightening film I've ever seen. I was researching it on the internet, and people were talking about the greatest jump scare of all time, which I think is what you were kind of referencing before.
Oh boy.
In the hospital scene. And so I was like waiting for it. And then when it happened, I was like, oh.
I wouldn't call it a jump
scare.
That was cute.
Yeah. Everybody on the internet was blowing up about this
awesome
jump scare.
I wouldn't call it jumpy.
Exactly, but I just thought it was just like a really cool shot. It was just like bing, bang, boom, and I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
And that was beautiful. I think the jumpiest scare for me was when they're in the Kinderman's house with the crazy...
Crazy.
And then so she goes to basically... chop off his daughter's head, and like at the last minute grandma like pulls her away, and I was just like,
so crazy.
Like it was like that was the moment for me. Yeah, that was the moment for me. Ooh, those huge scissors are fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is the purpose of them in real life? Like hedges? Are they for hedges? I don't know. Not
they're
heads.
Doctors.
Not
yeah,
necks.
They were like in the morgue.
Cut heads
like
off.
Autopsy,
that's what it is.
Like,
oh.
This guy needs a head transplant. Let's go.
No, I don't know.
Off of the over.
Obviously, Brad Dourif, is that how we say it? Beautiful.
Dourif.
So good. Oh, my God. Oscar-worthy performance by him. Like, I always forget he's so good in everything he does, and then just trying to, like, listen to him while he's talking and, like, picturing Chucky, like, doing, like, this monologue is, like, kind of fun, too. I was nervous when the film started because there's this scene when Kinderman's, like, with his family, like, getting ready for, like, whatever, and... The woman who plays the wife, God bless her, is not very talented, I would say. And it's like a weird audio overdub. Like, it's also not good, like, with the re-recording or whatever. And so I was a little nervous. I'm like, oh, no. Like, what am I about to watch? But then everybody else was fucking, like, the greatest actor of their generation. So it was totally fine. I don't know. There were a lot of bait and switches happening. It was just great. And it, like, kept you guessing. It was creepy. It was demonic. I really liked it. It was really good.
It strangely reminded me of an early version of Quentin Tarantino, because there's so much dialogue that has no purpose to propel the narrative.
Yes.
The narrative.
Yeah.
It's just for the purpose of getting to know these two guys.
Yes.
Yeah.
At certain points, and especially like the dynamic where they're both saying, "Oh, on this day he gets down, so I got to go cheer him up." That thing that they're too masculine to say that, you know, they're friends or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
It makes it the boomer friendship
he buys him
even
a penguin.
More solid.
That's such a classic man moment. They each tell people that they have to go cheer the other one up on this day, the day, the anniversary.
Well, it's the anniversary of Karis's death, right?
Yes.
Which
yes.
also, what they let you know is that the actual Gemini killer was executed the same night that they did exorcism on Reagan.
Yes.
Which is a great tie-in. I mean, all these things I missed definitely the first time I watched it.
Yeah, me too. Me too. This one really, the second watch was big for me to put everything, all those things together. And we talked about the first Omen. I was unhappy with some of the extent of the talking. It was so talky. I didn't mind it in this because I found it, like Dave was saying, like almost Tarantino-esque. The whole speech that George C. Scott gives about the carp.
Yeah, it's amazing.
His mother-in-law's visiting, and she has a carp she's going to cook, but because of the toxins in the carp, you have to keep it alive until you cook it, so it's in his bathtub, and he can't go home until the carp is asleep because he hates it. He's going to kill it. He hasn't showered in 3 days. This whole bit.
The confessional murder that you're talking about, just the woman's voice. You never see that. The priest comes in. He's like, all right, good, confess your sins. Just the voice and like the darkness, it scared the shit out of me.
And you realize with the priest, slowly over her, she's talking, doing her confessional, and you slowly realize, wait a minute, like at the same time he does, and then, oh my God.
Yeah, it's really good.
But I agree with Kat. Too many exposition kills. And that with detectives, maybe that's why I don't like them, because you get a lot of that.
You hear about the kill, you don't see the kill.
Yeah.
Fair.
Yeah. Yeah, because they talk about, you know, how this child's like murdered and then his head's cut off, and then they're like, and then they put a statue of Jesus on the head, and I'm like, why can't we see that?
You didn't even get to see the 12-year-old with his head cut off.
I know, it's ridiculous.
He was crucifixed to a pair of oars.
That's why I'm here.
Part of it is the Father Dyer scene that you talked about, Trent. Like, he goes to the hospital. Same thing. Like, when you watch this movie, it's an exorcist movie. So you're waiting for Father Dyer to get better and then have the strength to do an exorcism. Like, mm-hmm. that's just like a super easy like plot line that your brain would go to.
I thought I was going to be with him for the movie.
When he dies, it takes you a while to figure out what happened, because they have lots of scenes where like people are in the room. There's a sheet up over his body. All of the jars of his blood are next to the bed.
So crazy.
But they don't explain it for a while. Like, they're just setting you up. And then you realize, oh, my God, that's what that is? Like, all those jars are full of his blood? I don't think you need to see. I think it would have cheapened it a little bit. And this is, like, pre-Saw, like, pre-torture porn and stuff. Like, I think actually seeing some of the kills would have cheapened it.
But what kind of cop are you if you, every day, you walk into this place and you walk by a statue with a head on it, and then you find out, oh, they have replaced his head with the head of the statue. You don't think you would look up and like make the connection there?
I was wondering about that too. I think that was maybe symbolic. Was that really supposed to be that nobody in the entire hospital noticed the head of the statue had been removed?
I don't know.
I've never questioned it, but you are fair to question that.
I think maybe it was supposed to be kind of surrealistic or something. I don't know.
And it was something I was wondering about. Remember we watched It's a Wonderful Life. It's a Wonderful Knife.
Yes.
Oh, we watched It's a Wonderful Knife.
The great film.
Did you see this one scene where the killer crosses the hallway and looks just like the killer from It's a Wonderful Knife.
That's true.
Oh, it's probably a total callback.
That's true. That's very funny. I wonder if that was part of the design of It's a Wonderful Knife. I wonder if they were.
And that's all you really see of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It just goes across.
And he's scissoring people.
He looks like a fencer or something. Yeah. It's like this fencing guy is killing him.
I do have a question. What's the deal with this guy? Not this guy. We know the deal with this guy. What's the deal with like the morgue guy? Like he was like reading note. I was trying to figure that out. I couldn't was he like a
bad
guy?
The doctor, the head of the hospital. Was that's not like, the morgue guy. That's the head of the hospital.
Smoker, the guy that's smoking, chain
what
smoking.
What was his deal? Because he was like reading notes off of the.
Okay, he was preparing. He had written down what he was going to say to Kinderman.
Yes,
and he was practicing it before Kinderman comes in.
Okay,
because patient X has kind of. Has basically blackmailed him to he wanted to bring Kinderman into this. So patient X kind of gave him a script to tell Kinderman to make sure that Kinderman would then go see him and he could get his game.
I think
on
I missed that part and I was like, is he a bad guy? That's is why he possessed?
Killed, then later he kills himself because
okay, see, perfect.
This is one of the better novel adaptations.
Well, this he wrote this originally as a screenplay. He was just writing the screenplay for a proper sequel to The Exorcist because The Exorcist 2 was so bad. Friedkin was supposed to direct, but he ended up backing out. So then he turned it from the screenplay into the novel, published the novel, and then spent the next years in development hell trying to get it back into a movie. That's how the novel came about.
I can't imagine the director's cut not having The Exorcist. You know, I understand the studio made him go shoot it after he had finished. But I just can't imagine a film with less scenes in the cell with just
Tons Kinderman of scenes in the cell, but they're all Brad Dourif.
Dourif slash Karras just talking.
They're just all Dourif. There's no
Miller. They're so good because the first like half of the movie is all over the place. You get all the kills, all the procedural stuff like Father Dyer and Kinderman, their relationship, Kinderman's family. You get so much. And then at about like the hour mark or so, almost, I don't know, like 60, 70% of the rest of the movie, just dialogue in that cell.
Yeah.
Like the scenes outside of it are much, much shorter.
Interesting.
And I loved it. I never made the Silence of the Lambs connection, but it's right on par with that.
Yeah. I liked all the theological talk, even when there's some additional footage of the scene in the restaurant with Kinderman and Dyer, and they're kind of talking about the nature of God, and Kinderman is expressing kind of the age-old thing, like, well, if there is a God, why does he preside over all this human misery and stuff? For scare scenes, for me, just as much as the one that people talk about, you know, more often, the ceiling crawl.
So good.
That's one of the great horror scenes. That should be mentioned just as much as the other scene. I was like, oh, damn. I mean, the second time, I think I even backed it up and just wanted to see it again. Like,
yeah, it's great.
Show me that again.
And like the scene that Kat was talking about where the nurse makes, you know, because eventually you figure out that it's Pazuzu or it's something. It's something related to the demon from The Exorcist that has now possessed the Gemini killer the Gemini killer's soul into Father Karras's body.
Yes.
Anyway, he's possessing people, and that's how all this shit's happening. Spoiler alert. But the nurse that he sends to Kinderman's house, that creeped me the fuck out. Like, creepy old people, man, in this movie.
She was a patient.
Super well done. Yeah, she was a patient.
But dressed up as a nurse.
Killed the nurse, dressed up as the nurse, goes to the house. And then, like, at the same time that old people are creeping me out, that scene actually has a very good, like, sad moment when she snaps out of it. And you're like, because at first you're like, fucking old people, man. They're all creepy. And then she snaps out of it and it's like, where am I? Is it bedtime? Is it? And then you feel bad for old people.
Yeah.
It's a great scene. Really, really matured watching that sequence.
In the movie Old People, it's also a similar thing where it's almost like your immune system is compromised. If you're like, I don't know, you're susceptible to the demon if you're like weak or if you're sickly or if you're suicidal or
that,
like
and he says that the Gemini or the patient X says something about these patients are so easy to control or something like that. How about that dream sequence? Is that in
Patrick
the
Ewing?
Theatrical
cut?
Oh, yeah. What
Fabio?
That was the thing the first time watching this.
The greatest Fabio horror movie of all time.
Fabio is in this movie. That was the thing, too, the first time. So I already got all the black and white stuff being cut in and out. I'm already like, what the hell? And then that dream sequence with Patrick Ewing as an angel and Fabio. I'm like, what the hell is this fucking movie?
Is Patrick
Ewing like a Victoria's Secrets commercial for men?
Sports person?
Retired NBA player.
Yeah, okay. New York Knicks.
Yeah, it's like.
Well, this movie takes place in Georgetown, and Patrick Ewing went to Georgetown. It was an absolute college stud.
Oh, he was. Okay.
I did not recognize him, but I recognized Fabio and Samuel L. Jackson.
Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah. I've been talking about The Sopranos. It reminded me a lot of Tony Soprano's dreams. He has those dreams.
A few other cameos in this, too. C. Everett Koop. You may not remember the former Surgeon General in the United States. He has a very particular look. I recognized him. I couldn't place him. He has a weird like goatee and weird hair. He's in the restaurant scene.
Did you have like a poster of him or something? Is that how you like?
Yeah, who knows Surgeon Generals? Yeah.
C. Everett Koop has
like Secretary of State next to my Surgeon General's poster.
C. Everett Koop was a notable. He had a very notable look, and he was I think it was the 80s, and he was the one that told us not to eat eggs, and it was when like everything was about not eating fat, stuff like that. Anyway, he's in it. Larry King has a little quick speaking role in the restaurant as well.
Kevin Corrigan.
Who's that?
So he shows up as like, I think an altar boy or something, like Father Dyer. I think as Father Dyer's talking to him. He's the dude that's in like a bunch of gangster movies. I'd be shocked if he didn't show up in like a Sopranos episode. But Uncle Eddie from Grounded for Life. I don't know if you guys ever watched that TV show.
Yep. No.
Fringe that I've been watching.
No clue.
But he's married to the lead actress from Funhouse.
Oh, wow.
That we just talked about.
Yeah. Huh.
Did you guys get the actual Child's Play nod?
No.
Yes. I think it's the same scene that he's talking about how easy it is to possess the elderly people.
Yeah.
It's Child's Play. And then they cut immediately to a redheaded kid.
And then when it cuts to that kid, they say his last name, and it's
A K name, yeah. Mm. Kevins are not safe in this movie. However,
they are in the next
one. We are to be redeemed.
All of it, Kevin.
Oh, my God.
Kevin's Kevin week.
Okay, next up on Kevin's Speak of the Devil Week, from 1997, The Devil's Advocate.
Aspiring Florida defense lawyer Kevin Lomax accepts a high-powered position at a New York law firm headed by legal shark John Milton. As Kevin moves up in the firm's ranks, his wife, Marianne, has several frightening, mystical experiences that begin to warp her sense of reality. With the stakes getting higher with each case, Kevin quickly learns that his mentor is planning a far greater evil than simply winning without scruples.
This is so over the top. You can shit on this movie all day long. It is too long. It is so self-indulgent. Unlike some of the subtle winks and things that happen in The Exorcist 3 and plenty of other movies. I mean, they have the guy named John Milton. This movie is a massive self-masturbatory eye roll. Like, it is wild how over the top they went with this. However, this came out huge for me. I watched this movie so many times. And what this has that The Exorcist 3 does not is lots of sexy time.
Woo!
So you get Pacino, who is at this point just collecting a paycheck. And you would think that Stephen King was directing this in the 80s and just feeding Pacino coke the entire time. Because Pacino's on 11. Like, at least George C. Scott, even though he like gives this gargly like screams like out of nowhere, Pacino's just doing it the entire movie. And then you get Keanu. This is a good performance from Keanu Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
for me,
I agree.
Yeah, I love Keanu Reeves, and I, you know, hate people that shit on him, but this is pretty good. And you get a very young Charlize Theron, and then just a cast of characters. I mean, Heather Matarazzo, we talked about in Hostel 2. Jeffrey Jones, I think his name is, super canceled, so we can't talk about him all that much.
Oh, wait, Jeffrey Jones is canceled?
Oh, big time. He got To Catch a Predator.
Really?
Oh, no.
Oh yeah.
He kind of looks like
To Catch a Predator. Catch him.
He kind of looks like he would be a molester.
Well,
he's got that look.
But just like Exorcist 3 has the cop procedural part, this is a courtroom drama mixed in with theological horror. Uh-huh. And what a great premise. Again, another like super obvious and self-indulgent, but let's make a law firm where the devil runs it and they never lose a case and all they do is represent super guilty, you know, monsters. I love that stuff. Again, totally like Primal Fear like brings to mind.
Yeah.
A far superior film in terms of like overall execution, but I love the courtroom stuff. Super sucker for that. And I mean, I forgot how just like dirty this movie was because it's just like so entertaining. And again, there's a lot of sexy time to distract you from other things, but I forgot how like dingy it was. Like, you know, Keanu Reeves is Kevin Lomax. He's this hotshot lawyer from Florida, gets moved to the Big Apple to work in Pacino's firm. And like the early case, like that first case that he does in Florida, we introduced to him representing a pedophile.
Yeah.
And then I missed this, despite how often I've watched this movie, I missed or forgot that there's a callback to that right before our big finale where they're like, yeah, that guy you got off in Florida, found like the body of an 11-year-old girl in his trunk. It was like, oh, gut punch.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm ready to take my lashings on this, but I will stand by this movie until the end of time because everything wrong with it is totally right. And despite being like almost 2.5 hours, it's a hell of a fun ride.
This movie was fun. I thought it was a fun movie to watch. It showed that, you know, evil side of the world of defense attorneys, but, you know, like, everyone gets a right to representation in the court of law in the United States of America. So it is a side that needs to get, you know, examined every once in a while. So it was like a cool looking, you know, not cool. It was a dramatized look at that, but obviously with like a Satan's spin on it, which I thought was fun. The cast is stacked. Obviously, we got Keanu, we got Charlize, we got Al Pacino, we got Al Pacino's teeth. So yeah. Great performance from the teeth.
Should get a credit.
Dentures or something. I don't really know.
Dentist should get a credit.
It's probably in like the end. It's those, like
dentures
provided.
Going on because he doesn't usually have teeth that big.
I think they must have been like prosthetics or something for this role, because even afterwards, they've been very tiny. It's got a lot of boobs. Which, you know, some fake ones, some real ones, just like the whole gambit. Great, great boobs. Weird demon faces that pop up, like in all these evil people. And it has an interesting story. I genuinely enjoyed the plot of this film. Definitely not a gory horror film. Instead, it's got like the psychological fantasy situation going on that's accentuated by these demonic forces and theological stuff, as well as like evil gross pedophiles. So that was great. Really intense scenes in this one, like that first court scene, very intense and very gross, just like ugh. And it sets you up to realize the kind of people that this guy, you know, is defending on a daily basis, and then is about to kind of delve into when he goes to New York. I thought it was well-paced for a 2.5-hour movie. I think Charlize Theron was the best part of this movie. I think her performance as this character who's like slowly descending into like housewife madness was really powerful. It was a delight to watch. That was like the only gory part, was when she was like in the mental hospital. So that was well-executed. The big reveal, was predictable. You know, I think we all kind of knew that was going to happen, but it was still a hoot. The ending was fine, I would say. It leaves you to kind of guess as to like what's going to happen in this, like, you know, this next round of Keanu's fate.
Oh yeah,
right, you know, right, so you're kind of just like left there to be like, oh, what's
like three or four endings. I keep forgetting.
Yeah, the ending, the final ending when Pacino's teeth come back. But yeah, it was a classic '90s vibe, classic like '90s business, classic Pacino just yelling, just do it, Trent.
Hoo-ah!
A lot of that. But yeah, it was just like a fun week for me.
How can you not love this movie? This is, you know, like you, Kevin, this was a cable TV staple for me. I saw it so many times, and yet I forgot the end. I forgot all the reveals. All I really remembered, for the most part, was the big speech, the big Pacino speech. But then I forgot the main reveal, and then I forgot the whole, everything after the speech, I forgot. So I was surprised. First of all, I was surprised when I went to watch this and saw that it was 2.5 hours.
Me too.
I didn't remember that. I think on cable it wasn't 2.5 hours. I think
it was probably five. We ran commercials to sit through. What were we doing?
But we talk about this all the time. I believe there's no such thing as a movie that's too long. If it feels too long, the problem is not the length. The problem is that it's not engaging you. And maybe it's your problem, maybe it's the movie's problem, but it's not about the length. A feature film is 90 minutes to 2 hours, generally. This would be considered a longer feature film. But at no point did I think, like, man, this is like such a slog. I mean, I was held the whole way. This is just good old-fashioned 90s, big studio, big budget, big stars, big ideas. John Grisham meets The Exorcist.
Yeah.
Is exactly what this is. On the one hand, it's, you know, a time to kill. On the other hand, you got Satan running around. I was so surprised that you're introduced to Keanu Reeves' character by seeing him badger a child sexual abuse victim in a courtroom.
Yeah, it's wild.
On behalf of a very obviously guilty defendant who he realizes during court is guilty, and still goes absolutely ham on this child. I was like, how do you introduce, this is supposed to be your protagonist. This is the guy that you're supposed to identify with. And this is how you introduce him, especially, you know, in 2024, it hits a little bit different. Now I understand obviously the point was, yeah, the legal biz, it's not a bed of roses, you know. But I mean, it's such a heavy-handed way to make that point. Like, this guy has already sold his soul. The opening scene, never mind the Satan stuff, he's already sold his soul the minute you meet him. You said, you know, Pacino cashing a check, sure, but I mean, this is a great Pacino performance. He's just, I could just watch him do this all day. I mean, he's just chewing up the scenery like nobody's business. That whole scene with Charlize Theron at the party right in front of everyone when he's like manipulating.
Put your hair back. Like,
wow.
It's not his hoo-ah in this, by the way.
No, I know. I'm just kidding.
It's, he has the, he just goes, heh, heh.
Like, yeah, there's a lot of laughing.
He says so many things and then laughs at himself.
There's a lot of laughing. It's not Scent of a Woman, Pacino, but it's just not far off in terms of just how big it is and how grandiose he is. He is the man for this role, and I read that Keanu took a pay cut for this because Pacino would only do it. Pacino had a minimum that he would do it for, and it wouldn't work, and Keanu took a pay cut so that he could star opposite Pacino. I don't know that I would say Keanu is great in this, but I thought he's good. He's perfectly fine. I don't go for the knock against Keanu. I think he's fine.
Let's make a baby.
You know, not the sexiest.
Oh, baby.
Not the sexiest thing that's ever been.
His southern accent was better than whatever he was doing in Dracula.
This
okay?
is true.
How
this
about
is
that
true.
Scene where Pacino imitates him at the end when Pacino does him?
Yeah.
Was that really just Pacino doing him, or did they edit something?
So.
No, they put the voice in.
Okay, that was, you know, because that was too good.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, they put that in there. I mean, this is just a ton of fun, and it's a stacked cast. There's cameos galore, too, just like Exorcist 3 in this one. Just is a great time. Great pick. I'm glad I saw it again, and again, I forgot all the stuff at the end, too, so this was really fun.
This movie is Dracula, I thought. I thought it was very much Dracula. I like to see like temptation, that part of theological horror set in the courtroom with lawyers and people who are kind of up to things that are morally kind of questionable. I thought the ending in this movie looked like trash. That happens to me all the time.
The effects,
And that always gets me. And that's why for years, if you asked me about this movie, I'd be like, that movie's trash.
That's fair.
But if I don't judge it upon that, and I don't see the flame-broiled skeletons at the end all bad CGI'd out, I mean, this could be up there with Frailty, or like you said, Primal Fear. That's the thing that separates it, is that stupid special effects part at the end. I think this could have gone harder, like, decadence-wise. In the City, you know, Wolf of Wall Street, kind of like really going off the deep end. There were times when I thought that Charlize Theron was just kind of being annoying and like, okay, well, he was upstairs for 3 hours, two floors
whoa,
up.
Whoa, 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 whoa. You're getting a little too intimate here.
Wow.
I think you're giving us a peek into your life.
I have much more freedom. I have much more freedom than he had in this. But I mean, I don't know. I thought it would be better if it was like gangbusters, New York City decadence. I could have used a little bit more of that. That being said, this time through this movie, I enjoyed it much more. It was the day I couldn't turn the power on, and I just took the TV in there and plugged it into an outlet.
Oh, really?
And sat in the dark and watched it.
Nice.
And it was nice.
Nice. Yeah, so Trent already, there's one question that I wanted to ask, and you already hinted at it. Who is the protagonist? Who is the good person in this entire
Charlize
movie? Is she, though?
The mom.
I'll debate that. Is she, though? I'll
number
debate
one,
that.
The mom. Well, not yet. The mom is good. And that, well, the whole thing is, to me, it's Keanu's journey from the edge of temptation and from having already been corrupted. He's corrupted in the first scene in that courtroom. He's already been corrupted, and then he goes to the edge of even further corruption, and then he decides no, and the movie has it both ways. Then all of a sudden you just flash back, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. I don't care. That was cool. At least it redeemed his character to me. He decided that he was going to reject, that ultimately he's going to reject the temptations of Satan in his own lineage, and he was going to go back and do the right thing.
Yeah, but he's done so much shitty stuff up to that point. Can he be, is it, does he redeem himself enough?
That's a good question.
I don't think that Charlize Theron is necessarily the good person here because she's the one that eggs him on. Let's go to the big city. Let's do this. And then at the end, when you get the whole twist too, he is actually like trying to fight. All right, I'm not going to fall for this again, subconsciously, obviously. And she's like, come on, do it.
At the end?
Do it. Like, yeah. I don't. And the mom, is she? Because what did she do? She does this horrible thing.
She had sex with a guy. I don't think that's so horrible.
It's easy. I was backtracking quickly.
Slut.
But then she doesn't tell her kid and then just decides, you know how I'm going to make up for this? I am going to Bible thump the shit out of my child for the next 20 years in some podunk Florida town. I don't know if there's a true, redeemable, good character in this film.
Pacino.
If you go into the spoiler at all, at the end, this could be Kevin's It's a Wonderful Life week.
Yeah. True. Oh. Yeah, true. That this is very much It's a Wonderful Life.
You got a lot of...
That's right. True. Yeah. It was all a dream.
I'm not going to lie. Listening to Pacino say Kevin as many times he did in this movie, I was going to ask you,
how much of your childhood love, your longtime love of this movie, has to do with the fact that it's about Kevin?
No, I don't think so, because I even watching
it. All of it, Kevin.
All of it. It doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt.
It's like dressing on this. It's just a cherry.
You're hearing Al Pacino say your name repeatedly for two and a half hours.
Wonderful. Yeah, I'm gonna sample that and work it into a song.
With stacked cast, we mentioned, the now unmentionable Jeffrey Jones.
Unmentionable.
Yeah, but Craig T. Nelson.
Cool.
Oh, yes.
Don't see him in that kind of character role every day. Delroy Lindo, you'd know him if you saw him. A lot of Spike Lee movies. Cameos by Don King.
Oh, boy.
In this one. And that was a real boxing match, by the way. That was not staged. That was an actual fight, and they went in and filmed during the match. And Senator Alphonse D'Amato, former senator Alphonse D'Amato.
Were you a stamp collector or something? What's happening? How do you know? Like, when I was walking around with, like, remember those, like, magazines you could buy and you'd get baseball card stickers and you'd, like, you had one for, like, fucking the U.S. government.
I read the papers in high school, and Alphonse D'Amato was a outspoken Republican senator from New York, and he has a cameo.
No, I think it's cool. I'm poking fun. There's also a great Trump mention in this, by the way. Fucking great. And they shot part of this in one of Trump's apartments or something.
I know.
Like.
Okay, when they're doing the questioning of Craig T. Nelson's character Cullen, when they were doing that scene, and it's in his apartment, I was looking at all the gold stuff, and I was thinking to myself, Jesus, this is the tackiest. What is all this gold? This is like something that Donald Trump would have. And then I read later that was his apartment.
Oh,
but
there
did you
go.
Catch? So the scene that you're talking, I'm guessing this is where the senator shows up. So that when they're talking about the senator, that was an actual senator.
Yeah.
So like the scene with Pacino and Charlize Theron that you're talking about, it's a big party, all kinds of guests, and you figure out all these guests are just scum of the earth. They're right. all using this law firm to get, and they say, well, Donald Trump was supposed to come tonight. Like they make some comment. Like,
I didn't catch
that.
Oh my God,
this was 97 and they were already like, look out.
Did you collect stamps or something? Is like one of the best smart people disses. I'm always looking for a good smart people diss because there's always people that are smarter than me. I'm like, I want to get one up on them.
Get them.
What do you collect stamps or
did
something?
You have a fucking loser. Coin collection? Like, yes. What do you have, a coin, a quarter with the senator on it or something? Special edition?
You're out of order. You're out of order.
This whole court's out of order.
I thought it was a little suspect how fast Charlize Theron, Marianne, I thought she went from 0 to 100 a little too fast. They could have made that a little more gradual, you know, her going over the edge, but she was the only one seeing stuff. So
yeah,
it was her performance is really good.
It's great.
It's just great. Yeah.
It's like, really good.
I will say, I think I prefer her hair the way it was before Pacino.
Oh, I think he was right. Now I'd go with Al on that one. Yeah.
Really?
I like that whole, that whole
like
thing.
Like
I think he's right about the neck and the shoulders being a powerful thing.
Yeah. And also just to fit into this, you know, he's grooming her sort of into this society, and they don't have curly country bumpkin Florida haircuts. They have New York haircuts. They have big money.
That being said, I noticed you wore your hair up to the pod tonight.
God, I'm trying to show off.
Your hair is up now. The shoulders.
The shoulders.
The gateway.
I got
swimming shoulders.
In here.
Let's make a baby.
I am shocked that this was not turned into a franchise or a series. I mean, the movie being 2.5 hours is because it's almost like watching a Netflix like TV season that you can binge now.
Yeah,
like just go case to case, see who he's who is he representing this week. You know, like the cat's out of the bag. You know, Pacino's the devil. You know what this law firm does, and just go like case to case. Like this totally could have been flipped into like a 20-year television series.
You should write this out for Netflix. I feel like it would be perfect.
Budget was $57 million.
It made
$153 million. This was a $100 million net on this thing. I'm surprised nobody wanted to do anything. This was actually also a novel first. Yeah. And actually the writer, Andrew Niederman, he's the one, the writer of the novel, approached Warner Brothers himself and said, hey, I
wrote a book. You want to make a movie?
Yeah, yeah. I think this could be a good movie. And they went for it. Director Taylor Hackford directed An Officer and a Gentleman, Against All Odds, White Knights with Mikhail Baryshnikov, Gregory Hines. Directed Hail, Hail, Rock and Roll, the documentary, the concert documentary about Chuck Berry. Directed Dolores Claiborne.
Only one I've seen.
A Proof of Life with Crow and When Harry Met Sally, Meg Ryan. He directed Ray, the Ray Charles biopic, nominated for 3 Academy Awards. So, big heavy hitter, and also the writers were kind of heavy on this. Jonathan Lemkin wrote 21 Jump Street, Beverly Hills 90210, Hill Street Blues. Other writer, Tony Gilroy, wrote all the Bourne Identity movies.
Great flick.
Also was a writer on Rogue One. So it kind of makes sense to me, the feel of this, the old 80s, 90s, big studio.
All big studio.
Just, they're all flexing. They're keeping you engrossed for 2.5 hours. I mean, just, you can't complain no matter how silly it gets.
Yeah.
Now, what is this other movie by him that I see called Sniff? And it doesn't say any year that it's coming out, but it says it stars Al Pacino, Morgan Freeman, Danny DeVito, Helen Mirren.
What?
No clue.
And Variety has some sort of write-up about it. Maybe it's coming out.
I don't know.
I was kind of blown away when I saw the weekend that this movie debuted in theaters in 1997. Because it went up against the opening night of I Know What You Did Last Summer.
Oh.
And I think I Know What You Did Last Summer made like 16 mil. This one made like 11 or something. Which, obviously, we know what happened to I Know What You Did Last Summer. But the crazy thing is, I was at Main Mall Cinemas, RIP, on opening night of I Know What You Did Last Summer. Probably had no idea The Devil's Advocate was opening up the same night. I was dating a girl that worked at the theater. She let me and my friends in for free. It was a sold-out show. There were people sitting in the aisles.
That's cool.
It's a fond memory.
That's nice.
I love the dressing room scene. The gals
in
the dressing
do.
Room.
Yeah,
you know?
I bet you do.
No, just because the dynamic was so funny. They're, you know, trying to indoctrinate her into their little sex cult and showing her their boobs. And then
I think they're fucking with her the whole
grabbing
time.
That's
another thing that confuses me. Okay, now I know. I'm an idiot. They want her out of the picture because Connie Nelson, they need him to be with her.
Yeah, they need
right.
to.
Yeah. That's why. Yes. Yes.
I thought that if that was the extent of the special effects during that dressing room scene or whatever, I liked that. I thought that was genuinely scary.
Yeah, the demon
and surprising.
Faces and all that stuff were really good.
Yeah.
The Jeffrey Jones jogging death scared the crap out of me when I first saw this movie. And I've thought about it so many other times when I'll like go for a run outside. I always think of this Jeffrey Jones jogging scene.
Did you read about how the joggers are all dressed in the colors of the four horsemen of the apocalypse from the Bible?
No.
There's three, and they're each dressed as the color that is ascribed to each of the four horsemen. And then when it cuts back and forth to Pacino, he's wearing the fourth color when he's talking to, there's a lot of that stuff in there. You could deep dive this. I mean, I haven't read Paradise Lost by John Milton.
Oh, really?
No. Have you?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I loved that one.
Really?
I mean, not since like high school or whatever, but when I was getting like super into like, what the hell is religion? Yeah. I went all in.
Oh, wow. I mean, I've definitely tried before, but I get ready to finish this. But there's a lot of allusions to that. A lot of theology in this going on if you really want to actually get into it. But mostly it's just a great trashy 90s courtroom horror movie.
Yep.
Oh, how about when Pacino gets the blowjob at the restaurant?
Looks out of the look he gives him.
In the middle of the restaurant, he just whispers to her, and she goes under the table.
But the look he gives Keanu Reeves is
so gross.
So gross. Such classic Pacino.
That was pretty decadent New York. There should have been drug use in this, I think, they should have been doing drugs, maybe for a big studio movie like this in 1997. You couldn't have that. But I really liked the whole vibe of what now seems like to me when you have a movie like this from 97, it almost seems like old New York. It's kind of a different vibe, and that was almost a character in this. I felt like the whole old New York thing was really cool. Next week, checking out two films from 2023, Birth Rebirth and Husera the Bone Woman, both on Shudder right now.